Hello there, it's Angela Cox, the host of the Mindset Mentor Meets podcast, and I wanted to wish you a very happy new year. It's been a while since the Mindset Mentor Meets podcast has been on air, but we are back with a new series, and I have a wonderful host of guests for you over the next few weeks and months. I've been busy throughout 2023, building Posida 360 Coach Training Academy. And if you'd like to find out more about that, then please have a look at the show notes. I can't wait to connect with you all again, and I hope that you enjoy this series as much as I've enjoyed recording it with some of my wonderful guests. So for now, sit back, relax, and enjoy what we have in store. I'm delighted that you have found the Mindset Mentor Meets podcast. I'm Angela Cox, your host and indeed the Mindset Mentor, and I'll be interviewing executives and founders at the top of their game to find out what lies beneath. I want to know what makes people proud, how they define success, what holds them back, and indeed what drives them forward. This is authentic and natural conversation with the best in the business. So listen in, enjoy, and if you love what you hear, please do leave a review. And now, over to today's guest. My guest today is the awesome Daniel Priestley. Now, Daniel is an entrepreneur. He's a best-selling author of like loads of books, and he's an international speaker. I've seen him speak on stage. It's incredibly engaging. Now, Daniel generously sponsored the Posida 360 National Coaching Awards, for which we are incredibly grateful. But he's got such an inspirational story because he started with nothing and has built a multi-million dollar business, not just one, but several, in the UK, Australia, and Singapore. So I'm incredibly excited. He's wearing Posida green today, so well on brand. I'm loving that. It's great to see you and your wonderful smile, Daniel. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. I noticed it was a very nice, colourful website, so I thought I'm going to put on a colourful shirt.
I love that. Very on brand. It's gorgeous. Now, we've been having Wi-Fi problems in our office today, so I'm hoping that that doesn't happen to us now that Daniel is with us. But if it does, then we will just reconnect and all will be well, because I am so excited to hear all about Daniel's proudest moments. We always talk about the three proudest moments that you have as an entrepreneur, as a human, and I cannot wait to hear what you've got for us, Daniel. So should we kick off with the first one and we can get to know you a little bit better?
Okay, number one, I can vividly remember standing on the DJ box at a big nightclub in front of 1,000 teenagers, having pulled off my very first underage nightclub party when I just turned 18, and we had done this business assignment of identifying a market need, right? And essentially, I had proposed that between age 15 and 18, kids were too old for kids' entertainment, too young for adult entertainment, and that there was a gap in the market. So I'd written this kind of like marketing assignment about this. And the more I wrote about it, the more I thought to myself, actually, why don't I just put on a nightclub party for the kids? And we could partner with McDonald's, we could partner with local shopping center, we could partner with the local radio station and local council. So I didn't have that language, to be honest. I just kind of like winged it. I had no money, right? So just to paint a picture, at this particular moment in my life, I'm sleeping on a mattress on a concrete floor. I've got like a roll-up garage door at the end of my bedroom because I'm sleeping in the garage.
Oh my God.
There's five of us living in a three-bedroom house. I'm so broke at this point that I get a parking ticket and it's devastating. I'm doing Pizza Hut delivery driving late at night. I'm doing door knocking appointment setting on the weekends. I'm working in a bar Friday and Saturday night till 2:30 in the morning. I am doing university by day. Anyway, somehow amongst all of this, I pull off this nightclub party. And basically we have something like 1,000 kids show up, $10 a head, and I make $10,000 in a night. And it was just a wild experience. But the highlight for me, I think the proudest moment was just like, I'm standing on the DJ box and we've got all these prizes that we're throwing out into the crowd, t-shirts and CDs, and we've got a big skateboard and all this sort of stuff. Everyone's just absolutely loving the party. And I've got cash, like thousands of dollars worth of cash that we've collected that night. And it was like, yes, what a great experience.
It's like the start, isn't it? The catalyst of everything that you've built. I'm really fascinated by the tenacity there. So, you know, you're in this garage sleeping on a concrete floor with a mattress. I mean, I can picture it. It sounds hideous. And yet you've got the wherewithal to know that not how you're going to do it, because you've got to figure that out. You don't know the answer, but that you are going to do this thing and it's going to be a success. Where did that self-belief come from?
Well, it didn't really. It was accidentally getting one foot in front of the other. So when I was thinking about doing this, there was this green tin shed at the sports ground up the road. And there was a phone number on the side of the shed. And I rang them up and I said, hey, I'm thinking of doing a nightclub party, like a party for teenagers. How much would it be to rent the shed and do a party? And the guy says to me, he says, look, we've had this sort of thing before. It's always a disaster. We don't do it anymore. He goes, why don't you just call a nightclub and just actually see if you can rent a nightclub? If you want to have a nightclub party, do it at an actual venue. So I thought, oh, okay, that's not a bad idea. We were going out to this nightclub called City Rowers in Brisbane. And I just thought, well, we go to City Rowers and it's a good nightclub. So I'm just going to call City Rowers where we go. And I just call and they put me straight through to the general manager. And I'm on the phone to the general manager and he's like, yeah, can I help you? And I'm like, we have a nightclub party promotions company. We're putting together a nightclub party for 15 to 17 year olds. Because I'd kind of written this assignment about it, I did actually have some knowledge about it. We've identified your club would be a really good fit for this type of promotion. We're in talks with some big brands like the radio and McDonald's to sponsor the party. Would you be interested in being the venue? And he's like, yeah, just put it all through in a proposal, fax it over, and I'll have a look. Thank you. Bye. So I'm like, oh, okay. Well, I've just agreed to do a fax proposal. So I've got to figure out what the hell a fax proposal is and fax a proposal over. So next thing you know, I fax a proposal over. Next thing you know, he says, come in and meet me. And next thing you know, we're agreeing to a date. And then next thing you know, holy cow, we've got to fill it. We've got to get 1,000 people to come along.
Wow.
So there was no confidence required.
It's just one little step after another that is rolling.
Yeah, it'd be like being thrown onto a horse and you just have to hold on and not fall off.
And you did. You held on. You didn't fall off. And did you say 1,000 people turned up?
I think it was about 1,000. It was about 1,000 kids at $10 a head. Yeah, something like that.
Now, we know that you are famous for the wonderful Score app, which helps entrepreneurs to get leads. But I know that when you were setting up this disco party, you didn't have a Score app. So before we talk about Score app, tell me how you get 1,000 people into that nightclub.
It's actually really easy. It's really, really easy. So what you do is you print up thousands of flyers and you walk around the shopping mall and you put flyers in the hands of girls. You tell the girls about the party. And as if by magic, if you get the girls, you get the boys.
I love it.
So essentially all you have to do to get a really great 50-50 party is only tell the girls.
Brilliant.
And then it all magically happens from there.
So simple strategies, hard work, because you've got to go out and put the flyers out into the hands of these girls, but you manage to fill the party, get your 10 grand in. I mean, that must feel amazing.
Oh, it's incredible. You know those travel wallets that you get where, like, for carrying cash secretly? We had a few of those travel wallets and we literally walked back to the car with like four travel wallets full of cash. Yeah, it was absolutely cool. It was really, really good.
And so this is a good time for you to tell us a little bit more about Score app then, because that's the sponsor of the National Coaching Awards. I've mentioned that we're very grateful, haven't I? Tell us a little bit more about this incredible product service that you offer.
Well, I'll tell you a bit of background this doesn't count as one of my proudest moments. I want to reserve the right to have others. But
absolutely,
years ago, I launched a book called The Key Person of Influence. And right when we launched it, I put a scorecard in it, which was like, are you a key person of influence? Take the scorecard, find out. People type in the link, they answer 40 questions, and it gives them a report that we created telling them how they're doing with all the stuff in the book and what to focus on.
Yeah.
And people just loved this idea. They loved the idea that they could be reading a book, but also doing something alongside of it. And then the scorecard itself without the book took off. So we ended up getting 90,000 people filling in this online scorecard. We made about £15 million worth of sales.
Wow.
So it was absolutely wild, right? So people fill in the scorecard. Those scorecard leads go to our sales team. The sales team talk to people and we sign up coaching packages. So basically it was like a huge home run for a coaching sale. So lots of coaches started asking me the question, well, how do I get a scorecard? Because my coaching could benefit from that as well. And it makes it more tangible and it tells me what to focus on with each client. A lot of coaches had been using Wheel of Life scorecards and they wanted to have their own version of like a proprietary one. So we ended up building this platform called ScoreApp. And today we generate over 3 million warm leads a month for clients. And we have, I think, 4,500 clients running their scorecard marketing campaigns through. And basically, it's a super simple platform. It's free to set up an account. And you can use AI to create your scorecard. You don't even have to write it. AI does the first 1,000 words for you and just puts it all together and codes it all up. So you just customize it from there and make it your own. And now you've got your own scorecard campaign. Perfect for coaches because it helps you to qualify leads, helps you to make what you do tangible. And it's really fun. It's really enjoyable creating a scorecard campaign. It's fun to do.
And easy to do because I've done one and it's so easy to do and it looks fabulous.
Yes.
I mean, you know, from a how it looks on your website point of view, you can brand it up. It's just the most brilliant way of engaging with people. And people love filling it in because it gives them information about themselves.
Yeah. People love filling in scorecards and quizzes.
Yeah.
And it's not just teenagers. They, like, CEOs love scorecards and quizzes. So we have, like, you know, are you building a high-quality brand? Are you ready to exit? Are you ready to raise funding? Are you ready to engage in performance marketing campaigns? Mm-hmm. Are you ready to hire great leaders? Are you leading your team effectively? Right? Take the all of these questions, mm-hmm. like, take the scorecard and find out. So if you can identify anything that your client is not quite sure if they're doing the right thing or not, and they can answer a questionnaire to find out, it's just perfect. And people are just so drawn to these things.
And wonderful for then creating that relationship and co-creating an outcome with your client because it opens up so many conversations, I'm finding. So we love you for creating that, Daniel. We love you. And it must have come from that moment, you know, all those years ago when you figure out that how you get people into the disco is by putting flyers in hands. The scorecard is the new flyer.
Yeah, exactly. It's very engaging. Very, very engaging.
Love it. Love it. And we'll put in the show notes how people can find out more about that. Because if you are an entrepreneur, not just a coach, because it's applicable to all entrepreneurs really, isn't it? Then it's the place to be.
It works really well for anything B2B services.
Yeah.
So any professional services from bookkeeping, legal, accounting, engineering, architecture, web design, cybersecurity, like financial planning, wealth planning, all of those kind of things. It's just a perfect engagement tool for that.
And I love that you're rattling all of those off without even looking at a list. Brilliant. Let's move on then to your second proudest moment. So we've had filling discos. What's next?
Well, I'm going to go with something similar and it relates to what we were just talking about. So I released this book, Key Person of Influence, and I released the online scorecard and we collected all of this data. Tens of thousands of people were filling in these scorecards and buying the books. So we started to run these big events for people to meet up and learn the strategy. So we had the book, we had the scorecard, and then we decided to put on this event in Sydney called at the NIDA, which is basically a beautiful big theatre, right? It's a huge theatre and it's got like three tiers, three levels, and it all curves around in a big circle around the stage.
Nice.
And it's I think it's close to 1,000 seats as well. There's a theme here, about 1,000 people.
Uh-huh.
Right? And I remember we had some incredible guest speakers and we had all these volunteers come in. And basically, we put on this full day event in NIDA in Sydney, and it was just electric, just this wall of energy coming from the audience. They'd all read the book, they'd all taken the scorecard, and now they were there to learn.
Yeah.
And for a whole day, it was like, boom, you know, this whole energy. I think we did close to, it might have been close to $1 million worth of sales off the back of it.
Wow,
it was just like, yeah, it was certainly more than 600,000, less than $1 million, somewhere in there. Basically, it was a perfect home run. And I remember too, actually, here's the moment. I walked out on the stage and I hadn't said anything yet. I just walked out and everyone gave this huge round of applause. And I was just like, I haven't said anything yet. This is pretty wild to have that experience where they're just all clapping before I've opened my mouth.
Is that surreal for you, knowing that you're having an impact on coaches, entrepreneurs all the way around the world? You're helping them to grow their business. Is that a moment of what the hell's going on here for you? Or have you come to sort of accept it?
No, it's magical. It's really magic every single time. I remember having a kind of connection to the idea that each person is an individual. You know, the way I got over my fear of public speaking was that I had this epiphany that everyone only has one set of eyes and one set of ears, and they can each only experience me as one person. And I realized that it was only me that was experiencing them as a crowd, but they were experiencing me as a one-to-one.
Nice.
So they're sitting in their chair looking up at someone on a stage, and I'm having a one-to-one interaction with them, even though for me personally, I'm seeing 1,000 faces. And I think it was just that realization that these are lots of one-to-one interactions happening all at once. And that for me got me out of the whole, I'm in front of a crowd. It's like, no, I'm just in front of a person, just
nice.
Multiplied. And it is just a magical moment. And it is amazing, especially in those big theater style venues, where you step out and everyone's happy to see you, and then people come rushing up to you at the end and say that they got something out of it. Like, it is, it's really cool.
Yeah, it never gets boring, I'm sure.
No.
I'm yet to experience it, Daniel, so, you know, I'll just live it through you for the moment. I want to roll back, if you will, with me to you being a little boy, because, you know, you've had all of this amazing success and you've shared two great, proud moments with us that are all about you impacting others. So when you were like 6, 7, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Well, at that age, I was very happily a Boy Scout, and I was doing things like lots of, you know, Boy Scout related stuff, camping and building things and helping people. The Boy Scouts philosophy is very much like be acts of service every day,
yeah,
and helping people every day and being useful and gaining skills. You know, get your skills and be useful to others and do your best. So I was loving the Boy Scout kind of culture at 6 or 7. So probably maybe there's a little bit in there.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I had figured out what I was going to do at that stage. I think that probably came later. But I know that in my teens, as young as 14, I liked this idea of being a business owner/entrepreneur. I read this book called The E-Myth, which kind of tipped me onto it. I was working at McDonald's and I had this McDonald's owner, who at the Christmas party, he got talking to me and we had a great chat, and he recommended that one day I own a McDonald's, and I really loved it. I wrote to the CEO of McDonald's, who wrote back to me. I wrote saying I was really happily working at McDonald's and one day I want to own one. And he actually sent me the franchise pack, and I was totally stoked at 15 from the CEO of McDonald's to get the franchise pack in the mail. Yeah, which was really cool.
What an incredible story, though, of that CEO taking the time to do that, to inspire somebody. And did you ever go and do that as part of your career?
I worked at McDonald's and I loved my experience at McDonald's. I really did feel like very proud to be a McDonald's worker. I mean, it's funny because these days it's kind of like talked about as almost the ultimate worst job. Oh, you know, he works at McDonald's, and it's like, I loved it. You know, we were doing $2,000 every half hour at lunchtime and dinner time. And I was in charge at 15 or 16 years old. I was running the kitchen and we were producing $2,000 worth of product. Yeah, every half hour, like $4,000 an hour worth of products that we were producing, making, manufacturing thousands.
It's amazing,
of
isn't it?
Yeah.
And the operating model, that idea of standard work and everywhere you go is the same. I mean, how they do that is just phenomenal.
Do you know the first lesson they taught me on day one was how to sneeze?
Really?
Yeah, come on, so they teach have us, a Daniel. They have a system for sneezing. You feel the sneezes coming. You put your middle fingers above the bridge of your nose.
Uh-huh.
You put the palms of your mouth, your thing below. You cup around your face. You move away from the food, right? So they tell you where to move away to the springs, like the sink area.
Uh-huh.
They want you to try and move to the sink area, cover your mouth, sneeze, take the gloves off and put them in a particular bin, wash to your elbows, put new gloves on, and then come back and be there. So the reason that the crew trainer tells you that is they say, we want you to know two things. Number one, we take food preparation seriously, right? We're working with food. We want to be healthy as possible. And number two, we have a system for absolutely everything, including sneezing.
I love that. I mean, we needed that during COVID, didn't we? How to sneeze properly.
Sneeze. We could have got the McDonald's crew trainers. They would have been able to teach us.
But yeah, again, it's another story coming from you, Daniel, about your tenacity. You can feel the ambition that sort of bubbles underneath. It's all about helping people. But through the helping of people, you become successful. And this kind of visionary that people want to get to know more of. I mean, it's wonderful to listen to you. I'm desperate to hear what the third proudest moment's going to be in that case.
I'd have to go with the proposal, my wedding proposal. That would have to be a good one.
I love that.
We were coming up for our 12-month anniversary and I knew that Elena wanted to go to Lake Como. So I booked Lake Garda. I said that Lake Como was fully booked. And I booked this really lovely place at Lake Garda and we spent 2 or 3 days there. But on the third day, they slipped a letter under the door saying, we've had a gas leak and we need you to pack your bags and leave. And we've got a sister hotel in Lake Como. And they had all the details in the envelope. So we had to pack our bags. I had organized all this.
Oh, sure.
had to pack our bags. And then I'd photoshopped these terrible one-star reviews that I brought up on my phone. And I was like, oh, my goodness, this place looks terrible. And Elena's like, oh, no, this is ruined, right? So we're driving across and we're looking at these terrible reviews. And then, anyway, we drive up and there's this amazing, massive Grand Hotel Tremezzo. And I say, hey, that place looks nice. Do you want to get a drink there before we check in, right? And I just pull into the driveway and we walk up. And as we're walking up the stairs, I said, hey, I've got a really cheeky idea. Why don't we tell them that we're meant to be staying here and see if they, like, give us a room? And she goes, oh, that won't work. So I walk up and I go, oh, we've got a room for tonight. It's Daniel Priestley. And the lady says, yep, we've got a booking for you. And Elena looks at me like, what? And I said, oh, my goodness. I said, there must be some other Daniel Priestley and we've just stolen his room, right? We've stolen the booking.
I love this.
And she's like, oh, my goodness. So anyway, we're in the elevator and then it all just twigs and she goes, I can tell you've organized this, but how much of this have you organized? Like the letter under the door and all that sort of stuff. And I just smile and she's like, okay. So basically we end up in this amazing like apartment and we propose and it was a great week in Lake Como and all of that sort of stuff. So that was pretty good to pull that off.
Oh, tell me more. I need to know about the proposal. Like how did that happen?
Oh, well, it had a big balcony and it was a full moon over Lake Como. And I had my grandmother's engagement ring. And yeah, Elena walked out onto the balcony and I got down on one knee and asked her.
Oh.
It was lovely.
Proper romance. All of that effort.
You got to have proper romance.
I love that. And of course she said yes.
Of course she said yes. Yeah. And, you know, it's a good story. And,
oh, it's amazing.
Yeah, we ended up getting married and having three babies and a cat. And
how old are your children now?
5, 6, and 9.
Oh, wow. I bet they're super proud of you.
So it all
worked
out very well in the end.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, we love a proposal story. We don't have many on the podcast. So I'm really pleased that you shared that because it kind of shows us who you are behind the business. And you put a lot of effort into things. I love that about you.
Well, you know, I think something like that, you're always going to get asked, how did you propose and how did you meet and all those kind of, those are the stories that become part of your story. So it's nice to have a good answer.
I love that. And tell me a little bit more about What's going on for you now?
Oh, well, three kids and a cat and all of those things. But there's actually eight companies in our group. So we've got Dent, the accelerator business. We've got Rethink Press, which is the book publishing business. We've got August Recognition, which helps companies to win awards and individuals to win awards. We have Jammy Digital, which is SEO, search engine optimization.
Oh, I love that company.
Yeah, they're great. Yeah.
I didn't know that was yours.
Yeah, they're part of the group. So essentially, we've got all of that. And then there's two fast growth technology companies. So Score App, which is onboarding about 100 customers a day at the moment. And then Bookmagic.ai launches in January, which is AI tools for authors to write their book and get a great result with their book writing.
Oh, my God. So how does that work with the other company? Do you just call it Rethink Press? How do those two work together?
So Rethink Press is a publishing business. Once you've got a manuscript, you're going to go and need a publisher, and Rethink's going to do all of the work around the publishing. But getting across the line of getting your book published, a lot of people get stuck at that step.
Uh-huh.
And the trick with AI is you don't want AI to write the book for you. You definitely don't want that. But what AI is brilliant at is sharing with you potential ways of structuring the book, talking to you about analogies that would work, finding research. It's really good for giving you a perfect avatar and what they might be thinking and what questions they might have in their mind. It's really good for telling you that you're either on track or off track with your writing timeline. It's very, very good for telling you what a chapter might be missing. So you might, you know, this chapter has a lot of stories but doesn't have any research. Do you want to add any research? This chapter has lots of research but no case studies or examples. Would you like to add case studies like this one? So it's basically almost like a little writing assistant in the background helping you to write. And it's incredible tech. So that launches in January. I've just been looking at behind the scenes. It's stunning.
Oh,
and as someone who's written a lot of books, I wish I had had it.
Yeah. How many books now? I mean, I know of four. Is there more than four?
Yeah, there's four, plus there's the book called Scorecard Marketing.
Yes, I've got that one.
So that's five. And then I co-authored a book called What's Your Business Worth? I co-authored a book called How to Raise Entrepreneurial Children, How to Raise Entrepreneurial Kids. Co-authored a book called Mission Business.
I mean, you just are one man miracle, really, aren't you? I've got a question in terms of where do you find the time to fit all of this in? Because so many entrepreneurs that I talk to go, oh, I've never got time to do everything that I want to do. And here you are.
The clue's in the question, right? You said you're a one-man miracle. There's about 100 people on our team. So essentially, if ever you see a tortoise on top of a fence post, you can be guaranteed that didn't get there on its own. So it's had some help. So I'm that tortoise. Basically, think about it like this. If you've got 100 people on a team, you've got 800 hours a day.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's 800 hours a day going into the business. So you can accomplish a lot with 100 people.
That's incredible. And how do you find your people?
We tend to attract great people. In the early days, we just worked with anyone who had time and a pulse. And we developed people, and we worked with a lot of young people who were enthusiastic but needed training. And more recently, we tend to hire through recruiters. So we just spend the money to get recruiters. There comes a kind of moment in every business where you grow up a little bit. And we've hit that point now where we tend to find that we're better off hiring through a recruitment process that we can outsource and get people who are not necessarily raving fans. It seems strange, but to a degree, we almost want people who have a pretty cold view that this is a business and just needs to be run like a business, as opposed to people who are massive. In the early days, we hired massive fans, and that was great. But, you know, to be a bit more of a grown-up business, we just need to hire for, you know, positivity, but lots of skills and experience.
So you hire for skill rather than that kind of attitude.
There's attitude. In the early days, it was all attitude. We didn't expect anyone to have skills or training. And then where we are today, it's attitude and skills and experience. Yeah.
Nice. Yes. Balance of the two.
Yeah, it's just weighted now with a bit of the other stuff.
So you've gone from disco party, £10,000 in a night, to running all of these businesses, and they're quite unique in their own way, although they slot together quite well. You've authored all of these books. You speak internationally on all of these stages. So What's next for you, Daniel, the human? Because, I mean, there might be another child. I don't know. But tell me, what's next?
I think I need a break, don't I?
I tell you, you do. Like an annual year holiday, I think.
Yeah, just think I need to take some time off. So, well, what's next is ScoreApp is going to become a $100 million value business. And then we'll probably at that point sell it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think the businesses are either lifestyle business or performance business. A lifestyle business, your goal is to, you know, fund freedom and flexibility and have a business that you don't want to sell. And it's all of that. A performance business, you take on debt and investors and you promise them that they're going to get a whopping big return at some point. So you need to guide the business towards an exit. And not only that, you need to find a partner that you would exit to who can take it bigger and brighter than ever before, right? So that they're well equipped to go to that next level. So I'm pretty confident in the next few years, we'll build it to a $100 million business. And then we'll probably look at the idea of who would be the right company to own it and take it to a $500 million company.
Yeah, nice. And then is there going to be more time for that lovely guitar that's behind you?
Yeah, oh my goodness. There's a few guitars back here.
Are you good at playing guitar?
No. I'm good at having guitars sitting around the background.
Gathering dust.
Gathering dust, yeah. Well, they're not quite gathering dust. I do pick them up occasionally. But at the moment, I've got about my 7 go-to songs and I haven't really, you know, kind of broken out of that in a while.
Well, maybe that could be what retirement's all about.
One of my favourite things is there are YouTube videos on guitar, and it's a good, like, 10-minute kind of break the zone, have a little guitar lesson.
Like mindfulness.
Yeah, or do some jamming, a little bit of a jamming to a backing track. It's nice.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, you could have a retirement of being in a band.
I don't want to retire.
Oh, no, I can't imagine that you do, to be fair.
I'm having too much fun.
Like, how old are you at the moment?
42.
Oh, see, you've got forever.
I'm actually, do you know that the average age of an entrepreneur who starts a successful company is 42? So everything I've done up until this point is pre-season.
Yeah, you've just been playing at it, haven't you, really?
Yeah, just kind of doing a warm-up round.
Wowzers, I just can't wait to see what's going to come next then. So that's a good segue into, at 42 years old, what do you believe is the secret to success?
Oh, I think it's low expectations.
Oh, I never expected you to say that. Tell me more.
Well, if you want to have the feeling of success, if you want the feeling of what success feels like, then low expectations. Yeah. Because if you have high expectations, you're never going to experience the feeling of success. So, you know, if you're sitting there saying that success is changing a million people's lives, then you're going to feel pretty shitty right up until 995,000. But I see people all the time who they do something really incredible or great, but, you know, it's not a 10 out of 10. I've got one particular friend of mine who he has such high expectations how everything has to go that he's always in a bad mood, always depressed. And you got to remember, I started out sleeping on a concrete floor on a mattress on the floor. Like, everything's up from here. You know, when you've delivered thousands of pizzas and you've flipped thousands of McDonald's burgers, and if you grew up in a place that has 20% unemployment and most of the time you don't see many people from your area becoming international best-selling authors with multi-million pound businesses all over the world, then you sit there and go, damn, all right, I'm happy days. I could always compare myself with others who make me feel like I'm inadequate, but no, I'm saying have low expectations.
Yeah, I absolutely love it, Daniel, because there are many, many, many people, myself included, who grew up, you know, in a garage, not quite, but in that kind of, you know, working class style family, who fall on the side of perfectionism as a result of that. And as you say, have high expectations and are constantly disappointed. So it's so refreshing to hear the secret to success being low expectations, because that doesn't mean low output or low outcome.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Success is very subjective. So if I said, what's the secret to success? Realistically, you're going to gauge that based on how you feel.
Yeah.
You're going to say, do I feel successful or unsuccessful? I think, weirdly, Elon Musk feels unsuccessful most of the time.
Agreed.
His experience of life is, he's actually said many times, you wouldn't want to be me. He's said that because he doesn't have a particular happy outlook on life. You know, for him, he gauges success as making life multiplanetary and, you know, making sure that humanity survives and all of these kind of things. So it's a good recipe for being miserable a lot until such time as life is multiplanetary. Then I'll finally allow myself to feel good for 10 minutes.
Before I strive for the next thing. Yeah.
Now, if you were to go objectivity, then there's obviously a recipe for objective success. If you were to go and say, well, what's the recipe for a best-selling book or what's the recipe for seven-figure revenue? But see, the thing is that some people wouldn't say that that is actually success.
Yeah.
So the recipe for feeling success is low expectations. I have had some incredible experiences where I went to the slums in India and I spent time working in it, like hanging out with school teachers in the slums and at a little school. And, you know, where I was, they were dumping these barrels of water. And if they didn't dump the barrels of water, people didn't drink that day.
Yeah.
Right. And the water around was not drinkable. And I just realized, like, of all of human experience, if you compare with all the people on the planet and all the people throughout history, I've already won the lottery. I'm already it's all bonus from here.
I love it.
When you think about it like that.
I love it. I love secret to success. The feeling of success comes from low expectations. I'm so going to anchor to that moving forwards because I am one of those that has overly high expectations of myself and then is often disappointed, Daniel. So perhaps anchoring to that will help me feel more successful. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. I mean, just quickly, like just last weekend, this weekend just gone, having a 5-year-old, a 6-year-old and a 9-year-old, like a weekend is just like surviving the weekend is a success.
Oh, yeah.
If your expectations are, well, we have to be the world's best parents and we have to do soccer and chess and swimming and martial arts and we have to do all these things and we have to teach the children how to cook pizzas and, you know, it's like, you know, you're not going to feel very successful if you don't tick all the boxes. But if you get to the end of Sunday night and go, oh, there you go, we survived another weekend.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. And the thing is, you were a great metaphor in terms of, you know, you lead with low expectations, but look at what you're achieving. So we can all have that.
Yeah. We plan for big goals. We definitely plan for big goals. But my secret, internally, I'm secretly pleasantly surprised with anything less than a, I feel good because of that.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's that baseline of humility that you've learnt as a Boy Scout coming through loud and clear. Do you know what, Daniel? I have loved this conversation between an Aussie and a Northerner. It's absolutely joyous. I mean, I've never met you before. We've never chatted before, but I feel like I've known you forever. So thank you for being so open and honest.
Fabulous. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been a joy. You know, we've learned about you and your business and there'll be all the information in the show notes for people. But what's the one thing that you want people to take away from this conversation?
Well, I would love to reiterate, this is the greatest time in history to be an entrepreneur, right? So here's a final thought. Throughout all of history, if you were in business for yourself, you were probably lucky to be a butcher, baker, candlestick maker or something like that. Even more recently, you were probably very, very lucky to be able to do something in your local community. But we live in a time where it's totally plausible and achievable to have a global small business with a team of people all over the world, customers all over the world. You do something that lights you up. You do something that's fun. You leverage technology and media and intellectual property to make an impact all over the world. If you watch the news, you would think this is a terrible time. And if you tune out from the news and tune into the opportunity of the moment, like this is just the most incredible time to be alive. It's the most incredible time to be entrepreneurial and have an entrepreneurial spirit. And I don't think there's ever been a better time where like you could just simply build the business of your dreams in record time and make a huge impact doing it. So yeah, if there's one final thought, that would be it.
I love it. Now is the time.
Yeah, for whatever reason, you were lucky enough to be born in this particular moment.
Oh, Daniel, thank you for sharing your wisdom. Thank you for sharing you. And I wish you a wonderful day. I'm going to end the podcast now. Thank you, listener, for tuning in with us. and have yourselves a wonderful day. And so, just like that, we're at the end of the podcast. I hope you've enjoyed your time listening today, and a big thank you from me for taking the time. I'd really love it if you would be able to leave a review, because it really does help us to get noticed. And if you haven't already, why not subscribe, and then you never miss an episode. I wish you a lovely rest of the day, whatever it is that you're doing, and I hope that you stay safe and well.